Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Please welcome to the show this evening, Mark Ireland.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Many of us have experienced a death of someone that we have loved in our lives. So devastating that we often ask the question and seek answers to, where do we go after we die? Some of us wonder if the consciousness and personality of that individual remains intact, or whether or not it transforms and changes a few months after the death. These are questions that many of us ponder and wonder about, but my guest this evening, Mark Ireland, who is the co-founder of Helping Parents Heal, which is an organization with more than 26,000 members, assists bereaved parents and individuals worldwide. He has participated in mediumship research studies conducted by the University of Arizona and the University of Virginia. He currently operates a medium certification program. He is the author of the popular books Soul Shift, as well as The Persistence of the Soul, which can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other sources. We have a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and grab something dear to you. Please welcome to the show this evening my guest, Mark Ireland. Well, good evening, Mark, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Great. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting topic tonight, something that I don't generally talk about with guests very often, but I look to you as someone with great knowledge, and I think everybody's going to find good value out of this conversation tonight. So when we get started here, the process I usually go through is I usually ask my guests, my interviewees, where did this all begin for you, or your interest in how you managed to evolve to where you're at now with what you do? Where would you say that starting point was?
Well, I'd have to go back to my childhood. I grew up with a father who had unusual abilities. He was psychic. He was a medium. He could communicate with spirit. So I know there are skeptics who don't believe these things, but I lived it, you know. Dad knew everything that was going on in the household. I saw him do many public demonstrations of psychic phenomena, and I saw the mediumship come through with highly specific messages that deeply touched people, that made them tear up. And it wasn't grandma loves you. It was, I've got an uncle here named David, and he loved pizza, and you guys played golf together, and that kind of stuff. So it really touched me. So the psychic stuff was cool, thought it was interesting, but that was just my dad. Other kids, you know, asked me a lot of questions. I didn't know that I lived in an unusual family. It was normal to me. But the thing that touched me most was when I would see that spirit communication, because that made me really think, wow, we really are more than just a body and a brain. You know, consciousness is something else that maybe we don't understand that mystery, but we do seem to go on after this physical life. Mm-hmm. Now, despite that, I didn't really follow my father's footsteps until, you know, much later to get reengaged in that process.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what age were you? I know that in my family. I know that if there were any abilities of some sort, nobody ever talked about it. So when you were first introduced or you saw this happening with your father, now keep in mind, and we all know this, a long, long time ago, you know, and I'm dating myself here, but we're talking for me 40 plus years ago, we never talked about this stuff, or if it came up, it was always scoffed off or, oh, that's not real or something like that. And so I learned about myself as life progressed. But what age were you when you kind of were like taken back or realized that your father had these abilities?
Well, it was with me from the time I was a young child. So I just thought they were natural things. I think it's a natural process. I just don't think it's not supernatural. We just don't understand the full scope of nature. And, you know, when I grew up, I always respected my father. I took friends to see his demonstrations and things, but I didn't choose to be him, the next version of him. You know, I went into business after graduating from college. I got married at a young age, had a couple of boys, and really hadn't given it much thought until my youngest son passed unexpectedly at the age of 18. And that's really what drew me back in, because it was a couple different things that motivated me to go in that direction. It was, one, just a desire for a connection, to connect with him, you know, and know that he was okay. And also, I think it became an area of great interest to me, too, to dive deeper than I did as a kid. I never really thought deeply about it when I was young, you know, like, what's behind all this? What is our role here on the earth? You know, why are we here? All those kinds of deeper questions. And I think it was that curiosity then that led me down to dig into this field a little more deeply, and then subsequently to meet more people with these abilities, to meet researchers in the field, to even get to a point of conducting some of my own types of experiments, and even having some of my own direct experiences as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, whether or not you feel like over time, and I understand the evolvement of the process here. When I was very young, and, you know, I started having visions around the age of 3, 4, 5 years old, where in my dreams where things would play out, you know, literally on television the next day. But back then, you know, you couldn't really talk to anybody about some of these things, because then they would put you in a counselor's chair or a psychologist's chair. And next thing you know it, you're finding yourself being medicated. And so when we get distracted, of course, then a lot of us, we don't think always about the types of things that are happening around us, or could be happening with us. And I didn't fall back into this myself until I was much older, and then started looking back and realizing that I was having experiences ever since the age 3, 4, 5, and connected my dots. So did you by chance have, could you tell that you had any kind of psychic ability? Because sometimes this stuff hits and misses in our genetics. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't, and it might have passed down from your father or might have passed down from someone before your father. Do you know if before your father, anyone, your grandparents had these types of abilities?
Yes, actually. And researchers of this field have found that it does run in family lines. Mm-hmm. So that is a typical thing. But my dad actually had it on both sides, because his grandmother on his father's side did the tea leaf reading thing. And then on his mother's side, his mother actually became a medium, a trance medium. Mm-hmm. But that was after my dad sparked her interest in this when he was only 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. So he, much like what you're describing, he grew up in rural Ohio. And in interviewing my grandmother, you know, she first noticed this at his age 3. Mm-hmm. And then the most profound thing happened at age 5 for him. But they lived in, you know, no telephone, you know, no TV or anything, out in the woods. But right. My dad, even at that young age, would always say, oh, Grandpa's coming. And then Grandpa would show up, you know, within 10 or 15 minutes. And when he said it, and it got to where she started planning meals around those arrival times. Mm-hmm. But it was When he was age 5, he went into the Columbus, Ohio Children's Hospital for corrective surgery on his eyes because he was born cross-eyed. After the surgery, they had cupped and bandaged his eyes and actually restrained him in a bed because they were afraid he would take the bandages off. This one nurse felt sorry for him and said, you know, I'll let you up if you promise not to touch the bandages. And he agreed. She went on about her rounds, came back and found him bouncing a ball against the wall and catching it, and thought, oh my God, he's taken off the bandages, but he hadn't. So she was even more freaked out. And then she brought doctors over and they performed some other kinds of tests on him and stuff. And that was really the breakout event where they knew my dad was different. But like you said, my dad was kind of ahead of the curve. So he was a pioneer in a way, you know, back with people like Arthur Ford and Eileen Garrett, who are 20th century, you know, psychics and mediums. Even though he never had, I'd say, worldwide prominence, he was well known to some extent, at least regionally. But he had a tough road to go there. And, you know, today it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I think the world is more open and interested in these things. At least most people are. And, you know, I even have a funny story about a book that he had written that I didn't even know about. And it was given to me. I ended up having a reading with Alison Dubois in August of 2004. This is just like 8 months after my son passed. Mm-hmm. I had to wait that long because she was booked up so much. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks before that, a gentleman gave me a box, and in the box was a typewritten manuscript called Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development by Richard Ireland, dated 1973. Oh. And so 2 weeks later, I meet Allison. She knows nothing about any of this stuff or anything about me, really. And one of the first things she says is, I have your father here and he's showing me a book, but I think it's his book and he's handing it to you to take forward. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, I get that. And I felt like it happened that way because the world wasn't ready for that book in 1973, but it is now. So I was able to get that one released in 2011. But yeah, I think you're right about the timing, what the world was like back then and everything else. And I think maybe that's part of what made me not really try and go down that path. I have had psychic experiences, but they've been sporadic. It's not something I've worked at. I'll give you a couple examples. So one, my dad had done a demonstration and he came back and sat with us in a booth and he had to do another one, but he had a little bit of time. And he facetiously said to me, Mark, you do the next one for me. I'm tired. And I said, okay. I put my hands up and I said, okay, give me the power, Dad. And he laid his hands over me and we were just kind of joking, but I did feel an energetic change. Yeah. He goes, okay, here's your first test. Give me the name of that guy in that adjacent booth. And I didn't know who it was a stranger. Mm-hmm. But just the name Alan popped into my mind. I said, Alan. And then somebody else in our booth tapped the guy on the shoulder and said, what's your name? And the guy goes, what? He goes, well, just tell us your name. He goes, Alan. that's one example. When I was 18, I had a girlfriend and I had a dream one night that she was seeing another guy. But the odd thing was I knew his physical description to a T and his first and last name. So the next day I was like, hey, I had this strange dream. And she goes, well, tell me about it. I said, it's just a dream. And she goes, no, I want to hear more. I said, well, this guy was so tall and this color hair and this build and his name was Bob Dooley. And she goes, oh my gosh, I dated a guy named Bob Dooley in Kansas and he looked just like that. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of the kinds of things early in life that happen. More recently, within the last few years, one that was kind of startling for me and gave me a sense of understanding how that phenomenon can work with me specifically directly. I had a 3-year speaking engagement where I was invited each, you know, over a 3-year period to go talk at a church in San Francisco called the Golden Gate Spiritualist Church. And I would go with a friend, a medium friend, Tina Powers from Tucson, Arizona. So I would give a talk and she would give basically messages to the people in the congregation. But this one particular time, she says, Mark, I think you're going to get a message. Will you share it with the people there if you get it? And I'm like, well, sure. If I get something, I'll share it. Mm-hmm. And she kept hounding me about this, like she was afraid I wasn't going to do it or something. So this church was founded in 1924 by a woman named Florence Becker, who by all accounts was very similar to my father in her abilities. And she had passed in, I think, 1970. Mm. So we get to the church and even the day we arrive, Tina's like, as we're walking in, she's like, Mark, do you promise to share any message you might get? And I'm like, yes, Tina, I promise. So I had about 30 minutes to wait. So I went into their healing room. So they got this room where people are getting a laying on of hands healing. It's very calm, quiet. I sit at the bench for an organ or piano, shut my eyes to try and prepare and just meditate. While I'm sitting there, a name pops into my mind, Max. And then immediately after that, Maxine. And I thought, oh, maybe it's Maxine, not Max. Now, I didn't hear those names. I didn't see them. It came to me just like an idea would pop into your mind, you know, just a thought dropped in. So that's all I got, though. Nothing else. Then it came time for my talk. And at the end of my talk, I said, look, Tina made me promise to share anything I might get. And I don't know if the names Max or Maxine mean anything to anyone here. And the pastor of the church was like dumbfounded. He goes, well, Max and Maxine were twins born to the church founder, Florence Becker. They were delivered stillborn, and they grew up in spirit. He says, I think we know who is here right now. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to say, that's a secret that was only known to a few old-time church members. Then he took me upstairs afterward to show me a painting that I believe that Becker had painted. It was a landscape painting. It had a long, winding road. He says, see those two little figures at the end? That's Max and Maxine. So I could then see why Tina prodded me, because it was such a subtle thing. I could have easily just said, that's my imagination. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to embarrass myself. But mm-hmm. lo and behold, those two names, which are not common, and to get both of them, were highly specific to that location and the people who founded the church. So that gave me a sense for it. But it's not something that happens all the time. And it's not really something I've worked on extensively. I've been more kind of taking a journalistic approach to it and looking at the field and having experiences in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And I can relate to what you say regarding having things happen sporadically. I started journaling myself regarding when my experiences would occur psychically, and as an example. So I went into a very well-known haunted cave where apparently the mobsters had hung out back in the 40s or 50s or whatever. And I have an app that I use, and some of these apps work well if you know how to, if they connect well with your being or whatever. I have a thing with electronics. Things come in over the television that I've just said, or things happen. So I have a very interesting connection with electricity or something electrical, including slot machines in a casino. But when you're talking about things come in sporadically, I was in this cave with my app on, and we went into a particular area, and we're on a tour. And I always joked with my husband, you know, he's not big into this stuff. And I said, well, let's see if anyone decides to make themselves known to me today. I always joke about that, because it's hit and miss. Sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. But I had something come over the app that said floor. And I was just like you. Same thing with Max and Maxine. You didn't want to feel kind of embarrassed or feel stupid by saying something. So I had this voice come over my app, and I looked down and I said, does the word floor mean anything to anybody in here right now? And the two tour guides just absolutely went, they're just dumbfounded. It was the same thing. They said, oh my God, you just picked up. And I started revealing names that associated with the floor, with being buried underneath the cement floor from the mobster days, et cetera, et cetera. And they were just freaked out that I would be coming up with this information. Okay. So I'm like you, but I'm going to ask you this question, because this is something I've noticed of myself. I notice that when I'm in a very slumpy, depressed, very exhausted feeling inside, I activate. People are like, oh, I activate when I'm at high energy. I don't. I activate when I'm actually at very low energy, and my predictions and things that come to me are just on fire. What kind of mood are you usually in, or can you notice or think back about when you get these random things coming to you and they just kind of happen? Are you in any particular sense of being?
I would say I'm either neutral or higher in energy, feeling like a energy is kind of running through me. Mm-hmm. And then I feel very confident sometimes, like, okay, I feel inspired, or what I'm going to say or write is inspired in some way.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I would say, characterize it for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you channel?
I have not. Although, well, I guess I can't say what I would say that maybe I've done automatic writing without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is the book that I described to you earlier, I wrote the foreword to it because it didn't have a foreword.
Mm-hmm.
So as I'm writing this, I'm writing a lot of content about the purpose of the book and that it's to be used for the right reasons and not for the ego to be built up, but to serve other people, for those who want to go down that path. So it needs to be done for the right reasons. So I write this forward, and then I find some old papers of my dad's, and there's one that's called To the Would-Be Medium. And I read this, and it's almost identical to what I had just written down.
Yeah.
In terms of the purpose of the book. So then I knew that my dad was inspiring me in some of the writing that I was doing, or others were inspiring me, but that's, I guess, the example I would give.
Yeah.
And there's times when the writing really flows and I just feel inspired, you know, it's not hard work. Other times I'm just shut down and I'm I just don't feel like writing.
Yeah, I can relate. I've written 11 books, and 11 books about my experiences with paranormal, and now it's evolved into visitations with extraterrestrials or otherworldly type beings, or whatever you want to call it. And I just wrote, people are still looking at me cross-eyed on this one. I just channeled and wrote a two whodunit books. That murder mystery books. I have never had an interest at all in ever writing a whodunit murder mystery book ever. This idea came to me actually last March, where I literally channeled and wrote my first book in less than 2 months, and I just finished my second book, which is on Amazon, which I literally channeled. And it was just, I know what you mean, that you can just write, and you just don't stop. Other times you sit there and you're like, I got this block and I can't think of the first sentence, you know, that kind of thing. But that one I did in less than, actually, I wrote that book in 3 weeks. And I'm not saying they're any good, but I'm saying that they're whodunit books, and it's not something I've ever cared about ever in my past. It was very different. So I understand that, what you're saying. One of the things that this program we're going to go into now and talk about is death a little bit, consciousness, whether the personality stays intact or what happens to us when we die. And Mark, you'll have to start us out where you want to on this aspect, but many of us have experienced, including yourself, unfortunately, death in our lives. And we've had to learn how to process that. We've had to learn how to cope through it or get through it in the best way that we possibly can. And I just experienced within the last few months, there was a suicide in my family. And of course, the questions that are now streaming along the whole aspect is what happened to so-and-so once they passed away and died. And that's a popular question that we have even for ourselves. So let me have you figure out a place here to start on our consciousness and or what happens, or what have you found of what happens?
I think the starting point for me is really looking at our society and how things are viewed. And it's kind of an assumption from academia that the brain generates consciousness. So that's called materialism, or scientific materialism, or physicalism. Mm-hmm. There's no proof of that. They can't prove that. It's just an assumption that's been culturally accepted. And unfortunately, most of society buys into that, or at least has questions about that. Obviously, religion views it differently. Mm-hmm. But then some of the explanations there don't really fit, you know, rationally for how people would believe in it, you know. So I think we need a new paradigm where we're not just accepting scientific materialism, but we're asking questions about what's the nature of consciousness. And I think there are scientists doing that. It's just that they're underfunded and there aren't as many of them, you know, out there. So the ones that do this kind of work, Rupert Sheldrake, Dr. Evan Alexander, Dr. Julie Beischel at Winbridge, you know, there's the science of near-death experience study. I've interviewed Dr. Pim Van Lommel. He's one of the leading researchers in the field. And if you look at the NDE research, it's very compelling, and it paints a picture of us being more than a body and a brain. And then these people have cardiac arrest. They leave their body. They observe things that they shouldn't be able to observe. Like the one I like to refer to is Anita Morjani. When she had her out-of-body experience, when her body was in a coma and near death, she traveled down a hallway and overheard a conversation between her doctor and her husband. And then later, when revived, she recounted that in detail, and it was accurate. So even if somebody says, well, you know, the brain's still functioning in some way in that room, well, I'm sorry, but she wasn't in that conversation didn't even take place in that room. So near-death experience is one piece of a puzzle. I think there's a lot of different pieces that if you add them all together, they form a mosaic that tells us a lot more about it. Mediumship is another one. I've had readings that are highly specific information that, you know, correlate to my son and my father. Very touching. Even at one time, or a couple times, mediums actually almost took on my son's persona and delivered phrases as he would. There's nothing more touching than that. You have ADCs, after-death communications, sometimes direct communications. My wife had one of these 6 months after Brandon passed. So we were about to go on a cruise. It was going to originally be to celebrate Brandon's graduation from high school, but since he couldn't go with us physically, we took his best buddy, Stu, and we took our other son, Steven. While we were gone, we loaned Brandon's bass guitar. The bass in the middle, or the blue one, was his bass guitar, to a musician friend who had an in-home studio. James Linton was his name. We met James because he happened to be climbing on the mountain the same day that Brandon passed on the mountain. His group got to Brandon while Brandon was laying on his back, but he was there too late to help. But he did sign on an obituary that was online, and we found him that way. And he said, please call me if you want to talk. So we got to be friends. 6 months later, we're leaving for this cruise. He asked if he could borrow the bass guitar. So we loaned him the bass. We come back. The day we get back, Susie's sitting at the foot of our bed, my wife, Susie, and she feels another presence with her. Mm-hmm. And she knows it's Brandon, and she sees him as a shadow figure out of her peripheral vision. Well, this is wonderful, but what even made it more compelling was the very next day we get a call from James Linton. James said, Susie, I've got something to tell you, but I don't know exactly how to tell you. And she's like, well, just tell me, James. She was afraid he'd broken the bass, but that wasn't it. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I was recording this song, and all of a sudden I felt another presence in the recording studio with me, and then I saw a shadow figure out of my peripheral vision. I saw flashes of white light, and I thought, I'm hallucinating. So he said that he went and took a shower, he got some food, he drank some water. But each time he came back, it just got stronger. And finally, he says, okay, Brandon, what do you want? And he said at that point, he was guided to redo the lyrics and bass line to the song. Then he told us, this is the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it. The other side. So that's a direct communication, an ADC, after-death communication, direct, not through a medium, but just direct to you. Those are examples of one. Reincarnation research, Dr. Ian Stevenson had done for years, and now Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia Divisional Perceptual Studies. So all of these things correlate to evidence that life goes on, consciousness continues. What's the nature of consciousness? How does it work? Well, maybe it's primary. Maybe it's fundamental to the universe. It's the primary thing, and all this other physical stuff is a byproduct. Maybe it's flipped the other way. Mm-hmm. So I think the evidence for that lies in, you know, and I'm not claiming to be a physicist, but in the realm of quantum physics, the Copenhagen interpretation of the observer effect says that mind affects matter. And it's been repeated over and over and over again that mind affects matter. Well, if that's the case, then mind is a master, has mastery over matter, to me, it seems like. So I think why this is important is because we're all going to physically die someday. Mm-hmm. The people we love are going to physically die. A lot of people live in fear of death. They're terrified. And so they spend their whole life worrying about something they can't control or stop instead of just embracing it as a natural part of life. And the people that have near-death experiences, for the most part, report a very positive experience, a very all-loving feeling when they're over there, and more of a sense of understanding the broader scope of things and why we're here and what we're here to do is really for our souls to be refined, to become more than we were before, more compassionate, more empathetic, more loving, and to maybe assist other people and teach where our skills are, where we can help other folks. So I'm a co-founder of an organization called Helping Parents Heal. We have 26,000 members, and it all started because my son passed, you know, and another woman that I co-founded with, Elizabeth Boyson, her son passed, and we managed to put this thing together, and it's just exploded. So we've seen the healing impact of this kind of evidence for people. You know, granted, you need support from family and friends. You need to meet others who have been through the same thing as you. And then that helps you heal. You need to learn to be of service to others in whatever way that is for you when you're ready, because that will come back to heal you too. You need to let go of feelings of guilt. Like if you feel like, oh, I could have changed this, or I should have done that. You got to let go of that. Or conversely, anger and blaming someone else or not forgiving someone else who you think is responsible, whether that be a doctor or somebody who is involved in an accident or whatever. But that the other thing is this evidence for the afterlife and spiritual experiences can be very transformative. I mentioned Winbridge earlier. They did some studies that revealed, like, you know, someone who has a mediumship reading, a quality mediumship reading, along with therapy, heals much better than somebody just with therapy alone. So I could have told you that.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, or at least, and I want to get your perspective on what I'm going to describe for you now and see if you have a different take on it or if you could add to it. So people question at the point that someone dies, that they wonder, the very first question is like, where are they, or did they go to heaven? Now, some people that are very religious, or even those that aren't religious at all, some believe that when someone dies, everything shuts off and it's no more, and it's a black, you know, goodbye, it's all done and it's over with. That's kind of how I was raised in a way through my religious teachings, that when someone passed, they went to heaven and that was it. Close the casket. It's all over. It's all done. And that they're not hanging around anymore. Then there came into question when things were happening, things that in people's homes were moving or whatever, being tampered with. People are like, huh, well, that's odd. That seems to be a pattern that my grandmother used to do, or this is just something my mother used to do all the time or whatever. So then they started questioning whether or not this consciousness does hang around. Okay, so from my understanding, or at least from I don't even know where I got this from. I've talked to so many people about their interpretations. My understanding now is that when somebody passes away, if they so choose to do so, they could actually be hanging around for a good 3 months after the death before they transform and either go elsewhere, or they come back periodically or whatever. Now, I can tell you from my own experiences with my father that I was teaching in another state 600 miles away when he was dying. And things were happening in my classroom. And my first gut intuition was, and it was scaring my students because things were happening. And anyway, scaring my students. And I just, you know, you just can't reveal, oh, I think my dad just died, you know, so you stand there and you just try to deal with your circumstances. But the thing is I knew he came to visit me. Then I knew he tried to call me on the telephone, which I did not pick up, but it was 000000, that I knew that was very unusual. Then he came and he stood by me, 600 miles away, Because he had a particular smell about him, barn smell, and I knew it was him, but it didn't last very long. And then he had a visitation in my house here, just like what you're mentioning with the lyrics. His pitcher tipped over. I have this actually on video. Nothing, it's never tipped over ever before. It's, there's no way. And it was like something just smacked it. And I knew the message that was behind that from something that went on that day that I knew that that was in relation to. So even though he's been gone now for maybe about seven years or so, he still comes back periodically, but not at the, you know, what are your thoughts about people reaching out and their energy transforming and the whole 10 yards of what I just mentioned to you? What is your understanding of that? Because I have still having experiences, and I do believe they're my father at times, that he's not here all the time, like you with your son, or anyone that you might know. Do you reach out and hope that they give messages to you, or do they come periodically, or how do you handle that? Or how, what do you know about that?
Well, I have my opinion. I mean, I can't prove any of this, but I'd say, you know, my understanding is that the other dimensional realities that the soul goes to are just right here. They're just a different frequency, a vibrational frequency, kind of like a radio dial. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these radio waves coming into your radio, and you turn it here and you're picking up this station, turn it a little more, and so you're picking up another station. Mm-hmm. I think it's more like that, maybe. So that essence of us, that soul part that goes on, can express itself in a variety, perhaps, of different dimensional realities. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of progression, where there are higher levels that you progress up as your soul becomes more refined. You're closer to God, if you will, the further you go up the food chain. But I think there's always the ability for someone to come down to our frequency because of love. Mm-hmm. It's love is the bond. It is the energy that facilitates that. It's that desire to have that connection and understanding, whether that be to take away your grief, whether that just be to let you know that that person's around. I will say that, you know, I had a lot more of these in the first few years of Brandon's passing than more recently, mm-hmm. but I still get stuff. Mm-hmm. I was with a new medium friend that I'd never met before a couple months ago, and we were meeting another friend for dinner. So while we're sitting there, and her name's Farrah Gibson, she's really gifted, but it was kind of funny. I just started talking about Brandon, and I mentioned that Brandon played bass guitar. This, and so she says, well, he's here now. And he said that, but his new one had an extra string. I'm like, oh, that's true. Because this is a 4-string bass. And 3 months before he died, it was his birthday. And he wanted a 5-string bass for his birthday. And that's what we got him. So what an obscure fact. And then following on that, she's like, and he shows me you like taking all the strings off of a guitar. Did you restring a guitar? 2 days prior, I had met a friend. We had gone on a hike, and afterwards we were walking, and she goes into a music store, and she asks the guy, oh, do you restring guitars? Yeah. He says, oh yeah, you just need to make an appointment. I'm like, you don't need to have him do that. I'll buy. So I bought her a set of strings. I restrung the guitar for her that day. Mm-hmm. So she got that. And then there was just a number of other things. But fortunately for me, I get the gift of, because I'm friends with a lot of these mediums now, and I actually have a medium certification program where I test them. Yeah. And so I got to know a lot of them. They'll just spontaneously give me stuff because they're like always tuned in, always kind of on or very receptive. Whereas for me, I'm not like that. I mean, if I want to get something, I'm going to have to sit in a quiet place and try and meditate and hope I get something. You know, it's a little bit different, or it's just going to spontaneously come from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. One of the things that I know people bring up to me periodically too is there are times when I do go into, I visit my dad, you know, periodically in the cemetery, and or I'm in some other cemetery for whatever reason doing, you know, which can be very dangerous, by the way, people, if you don't really know what you're doing, because sometimes there's other things in cemeteries that aren't necessarily there for your best interest. But anyway, people ask me all the time, they go and they stand by their person's grave And then they start talking to them. And one of the things that I've learned along the way, especially doing kind of investigation type work, is that if you're going to go into a cemetery and you want to address your father or your mother or whatever, you can't just say dad or father. There's everybody in the cemetery is either a dad or a father or a mother or a grandmother or a grandparent. You have to address them by their first, their middle, and their last name and try to say it at least three times. Now, whether that has any type of validity behind it, I don't really know. I just know that, you know, everybody has dad as a label. So who do you want to come down to visit you? And I also hear that people aren't, those that are deceased aren't really at their gravesite anymore. They're in other places and not necessarily hanging about at their tombstone or their area. Where they've been buried. There's so many different theories and so many different wishes and wants. But I know that when you're healing or going through the process of grief, it makes people feel either worse or better or whatever to go and visit something that has the name of somebody significant on there. What are your thoughts about whether or not people hang around their tombstone or their gravesite after they've passed away?
I don't think that's typically the case. I think they're more often than not somewhere else in another realm, probably a better one, nicer, more filled with joy and peace. But there are, you know, I've heard the theory of earthbound spirits too, like somebody dies real suddenly and they don't know what's going on. They think they're still physically alive. Or maybe, you know, an atheist skeptic who doesn't believe in an afterlife, they find themselves still there and they think they're still alive and they don't understand what's going on. They're confused. Mm-hmm. So I think there could be something to that. But I think that the majority of folks, it may take them a little bit of time, but they're going to move on. I think there's people or spirits or guides that could help them, like an angelic level, or just deceased loved ones who have been over there for a while will be there to meet them and help them and bring them along. Mm-hmm. Again, back to the near-death experience stuff, you know, there's almost always somebody there to meet people. You hear the tunnel experience. They come to a bright light. They come through the other side. They're in this gorgeous area. They feel love all around. They'll often meet a being of light. They'll see deceased loved ones. They'll have a life review, all these kinds of things. So I think more often than not, that's probably what happens. You're going to go through a process like that, and then you're going on to your next home, you know? And maybe that starts out in one place, and then it kind of evolves to something else as you better understand the nature of the other side, because I think it's probably somewhat different than this realm we're in, with different rules and of how things work and so forth. Maybe more of a thought-based world than just a tangible physical type world, or maybe there's a variety of those and they all have different characteristics. But I suppose that there could be some that hang around. So I don't personally see the need to go to a cemetery to visit somebody. You can visit them by closing your eyes and using telepathy to tell them you love them and you miss them and you're saying hi. Mm-hmm. But I know for a lot of folks, you know, that's their, maybe their ritual, you know, to help them cope and to go through that ritual.
Right. Yes, that's very true, because I do know people that do go and visit. I don't know if it comes from religious upbringing, if one has a religious upbringing, but it just seems like there are certain things that stick with individuals on what they feel they need to do properly. Even when you're there, don't stand on top of the grave, you know, that kind of thing. There are these types of ideas that people are told, even in that sense. What is your take on personality? And the reason why I ask that is because I've always been asked the question, which I can't answer. I can't prove any of this. You can only go on your best gut feeling or intuition or what you think you might know at the time. But does the personality change once the person dies? So for example, I'll give you two examples. I have a cousin who worked in a nursing home who was taking care of a person that was incarcerated for murder of one or more individuals. So she was taking care of this person. And the person then passed away. And then, of course, in her mind, she said, you know, kind of like, good riddance, you know, you get what you deserve, you know, go to H-E-L-L, you know, that kind of thing. And she got scratched the next day. She had a big scratch, literally, down her back where it actually welted. And she believed that, and records, information about her taking care of this individual, his records all of a sudden went, not necessarily missing, but a lot of the dialogue that she wrote down about him disappeared. And so, you know, she was telling me this story and how she got scratched and things disappeared and how she felt like the guy was revenging her, you know, for saying in her mind, you know, good, go get what you deserve, that kind of thing. So in that sense, you would think that the personality of that person stayed, maybe, who knows, right? And then, of course, there's the other issue or the other situation where some people believe that if they're a nice person in life, they're a nice person in death. I don't know. What are your thoughts about when someone passes away and keeping or not keeping or transformation of their personality?
So my father, I'll refer to on this, but his statement was, if someone passes, they don't immediately become a saint or anything worse. They're pretty much what they were. So that's who they are. Now, that you have to keep in mind, though, that even though I think consciousness is not brain generated, in this world, it does function through the brain. It reduces consciousness to what we can function with to survive in this world and live day to day. And there are mental illnesses and brain situations that influence behaviors. So I could see where somebody who is a nasty, you know what, here, maybe it was, if it was brain caused or related to that, they may not be exactly the same once they pass. But for the average person, I would think that they're pretty much the same. But I think that after that, if they do go through, say, this life review process, and they are accountable and they feel, you know, what's reported there, which is really interesting, it's not this angry judging God. You have to judge yourself. So you're seeing everything you did in life, small things, whatever, that how and how they impacted other people. And you feel it from their shoes. So someone like that's going to have a pretty rough life review, and it's going to be pretty tough. But if they feel, you know, the pain, not only for the people that they murdered, but the families of those people that suffered, they're going to feel all that. So if that's pretty much a hell in and of itself, I would say. Mm-hmm. So, but somebody of that nature, if they were just like that, you know, they probably wouldn't change a lot after death, and maybe they still had something to do with that. And I think there are probably lower entities or less evolved entities on the other side that we may not understand all of that and how that works. Mm-hmm. But not focused on love, not focused on empathy and compassion, but rather all these other negative emotions and things. So maybe it did have something to do with that. I you know, it's, again, we're speculating here, but that's my best stab at it.
And would you caution people to be very careful about buying into some of this stuff, because you don't know if it's a trickster or something that's leading you down a path that you really don't want to be on? What are your thoughts about that?
I think most often, well, I have had signs. I'll show you one of the most remarkable ones. Actually, I put it in the back of my new book. But my son, Brandon, had been gone. It was just the 10th anniversary of his passing, okay? Mm-hmm. And his name, we gave him two middle names. And the reason we did that is because we liked Brandon Blake, but we had three family members named Donald that we had to satisfy. So we named him Brandon Blake Donald. Mm-hmm. And that became a nickname, BBD, okay? So here it is, the 10th anniversary of his passing. I'm going out to lunch that day. And I walk through a parking lot near the restaurant, and lo and behold, I see this license plate.
Okay.
Not BBD? Just BBD, but 10.
10, as in 10th year.
Yeah.
Anniversary.
So it was the 10th anniversary of his passing, and I got his nickname together. Now, what are the odds of that?
Yeah.
I'm not saying he manufactured that, but somehow I think they have a broader view that, and time is different there. So somehow that was arranged to be there at that time when I was there. That's the way I feel about it. But I think people will often assign things, like they'll give credit to, they'll go too far.
Yeah.
And then they'll, you have to keep some skepticism too, so you're more balanced. I've had other things. We were in, my wife and I were in Italy, walking through a little town called Sestri Levante. And our favorite, our main song for Brandon is Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. And lo and behold, we're walking through this little town in Sestri Levante, and we see this exhibit for the artist that did all the album covers for Pink Floyd. We're like, whoa, and it's raining. So we decide to go in. We dodge in. The second we walk in the door, Wish You Were Here starts.
Yeah.
So things like that. I've heard of other things for people who had, were talking about my son and they had a picture fall off the wall and things like that. So is that him? I don't know. Maybe, you know, and there's also the poltergeist effect that some people have researched, and that's been demonstrated in some cases, that it's actually more of an energy coming from the living person that causes some of these things than it is more likely, you know, a deceased person, you know, causing some effect of that type. But we had a lot of electronic kinds of things happen in the early days after Brandon's passing. One night, like at 3 a.m. for whatever reason, and we didn't have an electrical outage or anything, the stereo just came on blasting the music that he used to listen to. So there, it's hard to say. I think you have to go with your gut, and you have to trust, you know, what does my rational mind say? Is this really a sign? And how do I feel about it here? Is it, does it feel positive? There is trickster phenomena too. You're right. But I think I look at it like you set the intention for your environment through your attitude and through your, whether it's prayer or meditation or whatever, for it to be positive, for you to be protected, and that kind of a thing. So I always think of it that way.
Have you ever heard of the Akashic Records?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the idea of kind of a universal database of information where people can draw. So that's one of the theories that some people believe in psychic phenomena, but not necessarily that you're communicating with the discarnate, that you're getting it, you're, the medium's pulling information from the Akashic Record, which records everything that's ever happened. So that is one theory. My dad would answer saying, you know, I think he had a wide range of abilities, so it could be many different things. And some part of it might have been something akin to the Akashic Record, some of it clairvoyance, some spirit communication, a little bit of all. But I don't know that it's one thing, or we'll ever be able to identify exactly the source, you know.
Right.
The thing that I could say is the examples for me. Well, first off, one reason I developed a certified medium program is I test these people under 5 blinded readings on Zoom with no video. They don't know who they're going to read for. First name only is given at the time it starts. So there's no way they can cold read. They can't look people up because they wouldn't have known who they're going to read for. So, and the people who have passed, I've been doing this for almost 10 years. There's 41 of them. They all had to pass all that scrutiny while generating statistically significant results, that were meaningful to the sitters, and the sitters graded that. So, you know, you can't, I mean, skeptics will allege, oh, it's cold reading, it's warm reading. That's not necessarily the case. There are frauds out there. Yeah. I don't think there are that many. I think there are a lot more deluded people than there are frauds that think they're better at it, or they have a gift that either they don't, or it's very limited.
No, I agree with that. I've talked to several, actually, in a long time. I've talked to several about different things. And after a while, you just know who is more in tune, or can tap into you better than some other ones. Some of them might tap into you, but the other, you can tell after a while that it's kind of, I don't want to say hit or miss. What I'm saying is some of them are just better than others in being able to deliver to you information that that somehow convinces you more about the validity of that reading. That's what
I think. The other, there's another argument too that, oh, it's sitter telepathy. So I believe in telepathy, but it's not with the deceased. I'm reading the mind of the sitter. But I've seen many examples of that that kind of refute that. And one that's in the beginning of my new book talks about a day when I went to visit a medium friend of mine, but before getting to her house, because we were going to talk about the foreword I was working on for my dad's book. Well, before going there, I got a distress email from a coworker in Sacramento, and she told me that she needed to talk to me. Her brother had just died in a motorcycle accident and was killed instantly. So before I could call her, though, I went out to Deborah Martin's home, and Deborah and I sat down for a little bit. And after talking about my dad's book, before that, I even said, it's ironic I'm at the house of a medium today because a friend's brother just died. She goes, well, it's no coincidence because I need to talk to her. And I said, well, do you want to call her now? And she goes, I don't have time, but let's you and I just sit down and see if I can get anything. Mm-hmm. So she sits down, she takes a pad, she starts scribbling. She knows nothing. All I had told her was that a friend's brother died. I said, nothing else. Mm-hmm. She says, what's the brother's name? And I said, I don't know. And she said, what's the friend's name? I said, Linda. And within seconds, she's like, well, this involved a motorcycle and he died instantly. And he wants her to know that he didn't suffer. And then he tells me of something about the little kids. There's a concern about the little kids. And then he mentions something about a red ribbon or banner that I think went over his casket. And then there's, in addition to the little kids, there's a little boy, something about a little boy. So she started giving me all this. The only thing I knew was that she was right about the motorcycle accident. I didn't know the rest of this stuff. So then when I leave there, I call my friend and I start telling her all this. And she's like, oh, yeah, well, my brother had these kids that he had a drug problem for a while. And so we actually took them in and we raised them for a few years. And specifically called them the little kids. Mm. Oh, and Deborah had also brought up bath time or bathtub, something about that. Well, she's like, well, the little kids, their favorite activity was bath time. We put them in the bathtub together with toy boats and they'd have water wars. Mm-hmm. So that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, his motorcycle buddies had bought a red ribbon or banner that went over his casket. All these affirmations were correct and I didn't know them. So she was not reading my mind. So I was like a proxy sitter.
Right.
So I think that's good evidence. You know, what's considered the best evidence is called the cross correspondence experiments that the Society of Psychical Research reports on. If people ever want to look that up, they can find out more about it. I actually share a lot of information about those in my book too.
Mark, tell everybody how they can find you, if they need to reach out to you, your books. Take it from there.
Yeah, my website is markirelandauthor.com. Mark with a K, Ireland like the country, and author, markirelandauthor.com. There you'll find my books. You'll also find links to my certified medium program. You'll find a link to Helping Parents Heal for any bereaved parents out there that are looking for support. You'll find links to videos of my dad's demonstrations. And then I've got a bunch of media pages and other interviews, a short documentary, a clip from Discovery Channel when I was on there for a mediumship experiment at the University of Arizona. So there's a lot of stuff there at my website. And my first book was called Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. Mm-hmm. And this is actually, I would say this is a byproduct of my son's passing and all the experiences that happened right after that. It's my memoir. It's a nonfiction book. It's all the real stuff that happened to my wife and I. It includes like the experience I described earlier, where my wife saw our son. I've got four different mediums, top mediums from around the world that read for me. I shared a lot of the astounding information they shared and the commonality of it. My newest release just came out called The Persistence of the Soul. Mm-hmm. And this one continues with the personal narrative and some of the personal stories, but it's supplemented with more. It's a deeper dive. It's got more of the science supporting these things, the research. And I talk about more controversial things like, you know, how these phenomena fit with religion and history. Skeptics, I talk about, you know, an open-minded skeptic versus these closed-minded materialist types. So I get into different areas. I talk a little bit about reincarnation. I have an experiment that I conducted with my sister before she passed. I've detailed that in there. I even have a chapter on fraudulent mediums, how to avoid them. So it's kind of a cross section, but that one's a deeper dive. Mm-hmm. So that's what those two books are about. And I hope people enjoy them and they find them helpful.
No, good stuff, Mark. I mean, I hope people will go out and purchase those books. They're usually, I think you said on what, Amazon, Barnes and Noble.
My site, if they go there, there's links to all the retailers carrying them.
Okay.
Or they could just go to Amazon or Barnes and Noble or even other bookstores and bookshops, whatever they want. Even on Amazon alone, it's available in 11 different countries because Amazon's all over the world now.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing with me. Yeah, very good. Well, excellent work. Excellent. Good conversation tonight. Very interesting. I know that I always learn something when I talk to all my guests, and I thank you. And I know a lot of us are probably sitting here still wondering about this stuff, but get his books. And then you could probably put yourself or your mind at ease a little bit more in trying to wonder about the biggest question of the world. Where do we go and what happens to our consciousness when we die? So, Mark, we'll have you back again. Thank you so much.